One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, in our ninth broadcast year, this is the Force Center Podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsa.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and I did not realize we were 9 years old.
We are in our eighth year, ninth broadcast year. It's weird how numbers work. It's like, are you one or are you zero for a full year?
I'm Jennifer Landa. Sorry. Chime in. Nine is a good year. Nine is a good year in kid years. And in broadcast years as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's, what's the, are we second grade, third grade? What are we?
I think we're like fourth grade. Yeah. Third or fourth grade.
So we don't get naps anymore.
No naps, but you still get snacks. And that's all that matters.
Look at snacks. And then we get to study the clean history version of the California missions out here. It's a year you get half the story. And you get to make a mention.
Did you make yours out of sugar cubes? We had to make yours out of sugar. Oh my gosh.
I don't know what the equivalent is in Minnesota, Joseph, but afraid making missions out of sugar cubes.
The main thing I remember about fourth grade culinary things is fruit roll-ups had just come out, and they were the snack that everyone desired.
And still are. This is our news show as we entered 2023. Our first 2023 broadcast was actually New Year's Day with the Data Bank Dive. Sid's part of a lot of fun. Check that out. We're here to talk about news, breaking news from a long time ago and breaking rumors from this weekend and also look into Star Wars Pass. We got a fun little episode today to get us warmed up for the new year. I want to remind you that today's podcast is still brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, or I'm sure whatever new device will come out this year. We live in the future. We also are doing what we call the ask. Boom, boom, boom. We are asking you all a little, just a personal favor, just a personal favor from your friends, Joseph, Kat, and Jennifer. Joseph, what is this ask?
We are asking to get some help to get to 7,000 subscribers on YouTube. We've been doing more in the last year on YouTube, our monthly live stream Q&A, and we're going to be doing even more stuff on YouTube, including a new show called Figure Fights, where we ask which action figure would win in a fight, and even more stuff coming. And we, of course, want there to be people there to watch, to listen, to enjoy, to comment. So we have been asking to build on subscribers, and we asked at first for 6,500. We blew past that, and now we are steadily climbing to 7,000. So if you want to check that out, please do, and thank you to everyone who already has.
Yes, thank you indeed. This is it's fun to ask, but we always joke that for Joseph and I, at least, we don't want to speak for Jennifer. We are from a generation and maybe geographical areas that make it hard to ask. It's really hard for us to ask for help or just say, "Hey, here's something we're doing." Mm-hmm.
Yep. How do you feel about that, Jennifer? Do you feel like you were raised to not ask for help? That it was a sign of weakness if you asked for help?
Yes, I never ask for help. I will do it myself, even if I'm, you know, crying in a corner. I can do this. Yeah, no, it's a weird, like, weird thing where I feel like, oh, it's not being humble. What are you talking about? Of course, you can still be humble and ask and be proud of the work that we do.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. So I think that's a great visual. Let's get to 7,000 so we're not crying in the corner.
Might be something that happens anyways, at least for me. Hey, we're going to catch up on Star Wars The Last Adventures. For those that are just tuning in for the news, I understand you might want to get right to the news. That's in a few minutes, but this is a podcast we like to catch up, spend some time with each other, and spend some time with you in the community. We had the New Year's holiday for those that celebrated, but I also think even if you don't celebrate the holiday of New Year's, it does happen. It is a thing that does happen. The calendar is switched, so you have to experience it one way or another. I'm going to start because mine was, I didn't go anywhere. I didn't do anything. I barely left on New Year's Day. It was raining like crazy here in LA. It was like Camino rain. I left for about 2-3 hours for a birthday party. A great friend of mine, Zara Lisbon, wonderful author, got to spend some time, but I was like, cool, great. I'll have that Shirley Temple. I'll have a Rice Krispie square. I'm going home. And that was it. So that was my New Year's. I did rewatch the Kenobi finale. I'm going to talk more about that. We got a great question coming up later this week, Joseph, on the Q&As that you've picked out for us that sent me back to the series. And I will confess, post Andor I've been worried. Like, okay, the presentation of Andor is a little bit different. A lot of people say it's the best, and I don't disagree with that. But I love the other shows. But I was always wondering, if I sit down and rewatch Book of Boba Fett or Kenobi, am I going to have a different feeling just because those shows are presented in their own unique ways? If y'all know what I mean. I was like struggling. I was struggling to admit it to myself. Watched the Kenobi finale this morning over coffee and had tears down my face. Nope. I can confirm the emotional punch is still there for me. absolutely love that show. Can't wait to dive in. So it was fun to just be reminded about when Star Wars grabs onto your soul. It doesn't let go, no matter what comes afterwards or no matter what people say afterwards. It's still there for you. Mm-hmm.
That is a great lesson about enjoying Star Wars exactly the way you want to and wrestling with your relationship with it and making a discovery. I also loved your New Year's story about Rain being like Kamino, because now I'm picturing you riding one of those flying sea beasts, the Awa, while eating a Rice Krispie treat.
Yeah. I wish I could have. Grace was teasing me that I sound like a like an old man, but I was driving over Laurel Canyon to get there, which is already somewhat of an adventurous road. Mm-hmm. And it was flooded in a way I hadn't seen since the 2004 El Nino. And she's like, all right, boomer, stop telling your weather stories. It was a night just like tonight. But yes, I wish I could have flown over the storms like Camino.
It's like El Nino out there. I love it.
Oh, I remember.
Well, you both had some fun adventures, saw some wonderful photos. Jen, you took the family out to the hills, right? Out to the desert, out to Tatooine here in L.A.
Exactly. Yes, yes. It did remind me of Tatooine. You know, it's funny because Star Wars really did not find me. It was like a vacation from Star Wars unintentionally. I kept kind of trying to find it. And the only place I found it was at the Botanical Garden and Zoo in Palm Springs, just living my life. And all of a sudden I see a sign and it said Fennec Fox. And I went, oh my gosh, I forgot. I was like, you know, reminiscing about Fennec Shand's name, like out loud, hoping that maybe my family was listening. They were already gone. Nobody cared. There was like people walking by as I'm talking to myself. I was delighted. But yeah, other than that, that was it. There was nothing. Oh, actually, no, I lie. When we went on a hike in Palm Springs, the Tuckweeds Canyon, they have these incredible boulders and these like things where you can look over the cliffs. And I now understand why people like nature. I've never been a nature person, but I was like, this is inspirational. This could be a place where I could like seriously like sit and meditate like a Jedi. Like I get it now. I did not because there were a lot of tourists taking photos, but that would have been funny if I just plopped down like need to focus here. But yeah, that was it. No Star Wars other than that.
That's great. First of all, I love that you're kind of either a Jedi based in Coruscant or an Ewok that found civilization was like, I like going to the metal buildings, not the wood ones here.
I love that. Were you picturing like the rocks on Tython? Like you could crawl up there and say, hey, this rock looks Jedi to me.
That's exactly it. And it's one of those things. And there were even like some cave like areas that reminded me of, you know, the Jawas and R2 in A New Hope. And I wanted like my kids to recreate it. And it came to a point where I was so tired. It was the end of the year. I was exhausted on this vacation. I'm like, I don't have the energy to try and recreate this and get my kids motivated because they'd be like, what, mom? And then I just felt sad. I'll just keep it to myself. But maybe I'll go to Death Valley someday.
Yeah, we can do a field trip. We can record an episode of Force Center just in the middle of the desert.
We might have to. All my years, I've never gone out there.
Me neither.
Beautiful. Well, from meditating in the hills and looking at Fennec Foxes, Joseph, you had another wonderful time away on the New Year's Day. Love the photos. My kind of beach is where you went to.
Yeah. No, it's been a really interesting end of the year because we went home to Minneapolis and the weather tried to murder us there in multiple ways from the cold winds, the cold temperatures, the icy roads. And then we came home and we had like 3 days and then we went to a little spot on the beach near Los Angeles that we like to go to for New Year's. And we knew it would be cold, but it was a really fun and an interesting adventure because it was cold. Then it was beautifully sunny. Then the wind whipped the sand at the speed of the deleted scene of Return of the Jedi. I stepped out of the hotel to go walk on the beach because, like, we just want to experience it on New Year's Day. We don't care how powerful it is. And it was absolute cartoon comedy moment where we stepped out and it's like, this isn't that bad. It's actually quite. And then I stepped around the side of the building and literally got like punched in the face by sand mid sentence. But it was great. It was amazing. My wife had given me a new shirt for New Year's Day, which she had found just a nice blue Jedi symbol. So we went and took some pictures of that, which is what, if people are on social media, what we posted from that day. I am fighting in those photos to not literally be blown into the sea, but it was great. Loved it. Great. Yeah. I had a good New Year's. I posted a couple places on social media. I tried something different in 2022 where I used to make goals that were really hard to keep up with, like exercise all the time, become a better human, like, things that are hard to check off. Did I do that? Was I less distracted by social media? Hard to tell. So I only made goals that were like yes or no, up or down. I did them or I didn't. And they're things that I control, not that anybody else controls. Like write a movie, not sell a movie, because I can't control if I sell a movie. I can control if I write a movie. So that was a really nice experience and really helped my new year to think forward about like what are goals that are concrete and I can control. So that was kind of my big life adventure, is pushing through and finishing some of those goals. Nice vacation. And then the Star Wars adventure I wanted to share in particular is we've been going to this one specific town to stay at that inn by the beach. And it's a nice little downtown area, lots of quaint shops. And we went there on New Year's Eve day downtown. And my wife finally realized, like, we normally walk all three of these blocks, but we don't walk that last half block. And it turns out there's a comic book and toy store with a bunch of great toys. We've been there like 8 times and been like 20 feet away from action figures you can't find in the store.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was such a like a life lesson of just like, just go a little bit farther. Just question what is right over the horizon. So on New Year's Eve day, I got a Mandalorian Death Watch Airborne Trooper from the Clone Wars, basically Boba Fett with blue armor. And I found Jackson, the Black Series Jackson with the absolutely terrifying face, which was just a joy to be rewarded for walking a half a block more and finding some new friends.
Amazing.
I am the king of have you ever played this mode on a game, or have you ever tried this button on your oven? No, I just work what I know. And then you do it and you realize, oh wow, there's something great out there for me. That's wonderful.
Yeah, no, it was a good life lesson going into the new year.
Yeah. Love that. Well, we are gonna go into the new year of Star Wars news, everybody. And you know, as would be expected, it's a holiday. Star Wars newsmakers take time off as well, whether it be up there at Lucasfilm or just those tracking the news. So a little bit less to choose from. But there's a story going around, and we'll say here, we'll give a little bit of a rumor warning here. We're going to dive into rumors. It's not that we try to avoid that. We just try to be very careful how we discuss that here. And this is a story that I will say that was not yet picked up by any major movie news site. The deadlines, the varieties, anything that Hollywood Reporters, and the report itself, I've seen it discussed, and so that means it's on our radar screen, and we want to look at it. The report itself comes from a blog that includes in the article a really side swiping out of nowhere attack on Rian Johnson. That's a red flag right there for me, and we'll discuss a little bit more about that here in a second. And its claim, and here's the headline, that the Damon Lindelof-led Star Wars movie will be moving into production in April. That's the headline. This, of course, would suggest that it's far along the pre-production process, or at least into the pre-production process, which might include major casting. But who knows? We're going to start in there. But before we go into it, Joseph, Jennifer, your thoughts on, I don't know, the story itself, the source, the world we live in. I don't know. Where do you want to go?
Well, I did some digging on this specific site, and the person behind it, it is, you know, an entertainment blog. You know, the person is, you know, rated on or whatever the word is, credited. He's got a tomato card. I don't know. Yeah. The you know, Rotten Tomatoes, whatever that is. I did find some discussion on a subreddit called Oscar Race. There was multiple discussions that the site was not particularly reliable, in that some of the scoops, that actually most of the scoops are often wrong. Sometimes things are as simple as like the runtime of a completed film. Like you know, things like posting like a week before the runtime of a completed film is announced, you know, this site will say, we know it's this many minutes, and then it just isn't. And things like that happen again and again and again, it seems like. So I think maybe the reason that some of the trades haven't picked this up is that it is probably not entirely verified or super accurate. So definitely think this one should be strongly, strongly in the awooga rumor category.
Yeah, absolutely. Jen, what bells go awooga in your brain when these stories come out?
Oh, my gosh. You know, it's one of those things where maybe it's a generational thing, because I lived before the internet, and there was a certain ethics that journalists had. And I guess that's the key word, journalists. And so nowadays we have so many people, anybody, myself included, who can write blogs and write anything we want, right? We don't have to have a code of ethics. We don't have to be a journalist, and it can get out there and it can gain traction and it can be totally false. And if you're a young person, that can be actually kind of overwhelming because you don't know who's telling the truth and who's not. Mm-hmm. But immediately when I was reading this, just by the tone, it became very clear that this person has some sort of agenda, which we'll dive into. And it just lost all credibility because it like put Star Wars diehard fans vowed to never return to the franchise after the sequel trilogy. I was like, what? Like the way that was presented was so biased, which immediately, you know, you would not really see that in a Deadline or Hollywood Reporter or Variety article. And that was another thing was I was like, wow, I totally missed this on my vacation. How did I miss it? This is going into production. Well, this is why. I don't know whose source this person spoke to, but question it.
It's the Dave Foley from Kids in the Hall Brain Candy movie character. I'm just some guy, you know, just that's the source, just some mysterious guy in the corner. Yeah. And look, we're not here to, we don't start the year off super, super negative or snarky or anything. It's just, it's the cycle keeps going. And, and Jen, you're talking about, almost want to say you're talking about the good old days of journalism, but it's way more complicated than that. But you got this in your blood. This is in your family blood. Just the news people of the past, and it does create some interesting questions about always digging in. Joseph's done some great research here, considering who's reporting this, where it's coming from. It doesn't mean even the big ones don't occasionally get this wrong or pick it up, which is why I think I did want to discuss it, because there's some stuff in here that it just seems like if you're just passing through, and again, like my friends who are still on Facebook, they're the ones that just pass through this, and they'll just go, here it is, a bunch of facts. And look, I'll say this, all of this could end up being right, right? Who knows? Maybe some guy on the lot, snuck some information out. That does happen. So everything could be here, right? We're not saying that's what's at dispute here, but the idea that this post claims that the film would feature new leads. Got it. That's probably a pretty simple guess, but also sequel trilogy characters. And then you combine that with Daisy Ridley having lunch at Lucasfilm on Instagram. And suddenly that's a fact. Suddenly that's treated as, oh, here we go. And we're going post Rise of Skywalker, Lindelof and his team, which includes writer and the director, Obed Chinoy. Charmaine's going to be directing it. That now we're dealing with quote unquote facts. It's just not true. So we wanted to dive in, but also talk about the idea of, hey, eventually they are going to put a movie into production. This will happen. So put this to the one. So there you go. That's the big overall, putting it all the cards on the table here. But Joseph, we'll start this discussion off of the idea, not the rumor, the idea of this project, including sequel characters or getting up and running fast. Where does your mind go with all that?
Yeah, no, I really agree with what you're saying about trying not to discuss it as, yep, that's going to happen, but a really fun what if. Are we interested in this idea? And my final thought on just the nature of the actual reporting is that these things can be like the telephone game of, right? There might be some kernel of truth in it somewhere, might be so warped by the time it comes out that there's no truth left in it, but there might be a kernel. And I think that's what's fun, you know, to play this what if game. What if is true that some sequel characters might pop up? I think for me, the idea that this new, not just film, but it sounds like maybe slate, that Damon Lindelof is putting together a team of creative people. That was the reporting from the trades. It makes a lot of sense to me that it would be set post the sequel trilogy.
Yeah.
So everything can just have elbow room to sort of move forward. And I love the idea then within that characters from the sequel trilogy who might be significant to whatever the conflict of the film is would show up. So my mind goes to like possibilities of, you know, is this about the new Republic, their challenges as they begin? You know, we've got a little bit of that story in The Mandalorian with the new Republic, but that's kind of running in the background, right? But what if this really is, you know, all hands on deck? We are trying to get this shattered galaxy to come back together? Are there lots of, you know, civil wars and factions? Because are some, a lot of systems being like, hey, we've tried being a unified galaxy and it doesn't work. And there's all this conflict everywhere, you know? Mm. In which case you could have new characters, but you could have a Poe, a Rose, a Larma Dassey. I hope it's a Larma Dassey solo movie. Yeah. So, but then there's also that great thread of how many First Order stormtroopers are out there. How many of them might still be fighting for the cause versus looking for home? And then you have the possibility of characters like Janna and Finn, right, being side characters. So I think those are the kind of the threads, the timeline that are interesting to me in the possibility of various sequel characters being on the being supporting characters in mm-hmm. stories like this.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. It makes sense. Jen, where does your mind go?
Yeah, that's really, really great. I question how much of a role the sequel trilogy characters would have mm-hmm. in this. I think maybe just a couple scenes. It is interesting, the Daisy Ridley lunch thing. I don't think it is necessarily at Lucasfilm. I don't think it's necessarily related to this film per se. It could just be related to what they're cooking up in the next, you know, 5-10 years. It could be, oh, we want you for this animated project and maybe you could make an appearance here and blah, blah, blah. It's just keeping yeah. goodwill amongst this relationship. So mm-hmm. I don't know, but it is interesting. It is interesting. Oh. I mean, they're not just going to randomly be like, hey, come on over for lunch. Like, there has to be some sort of reason why.
Yeah, I always thought that. I viewed that as an exploratory meal.
Exactly. Yeah, let's have a general. Let's just, you know, like, see what comes up.
Could be non-Star Wars, too. It could be that, Daisy Ridley and Kathleen Kennedy are like, Kathleen Kennedy's looking at, we need to keep expanding Lucasfilm beyond, you know, just Star Wars. We're looking at this. Here's some ideas. Are you interested in any of these, Daisy? It could be that too.
Oh my gosh. You're so right. That could totally be it. I mean, I love Willow so much. So why not include her in that side? But yeah, I could see Poe stopping by. I don't know about Finn. I like, it's so funny. I had the same thought about Larma Dacey. Even, what is it? Zori Bliss, Carrie Russell's character. That could be cool. But I think that they'll use it as like a sprinkling of Star Wars seasoning, as I say, as opposed to a main part of the storyline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think I'm in a weird spot on that. First of all, I've heard rumors that the Lucasfilm food court is pretty solid, so maybe that is just enough draw to get up there. I've heard tales of fresh mac and cheese served every day.
Ooh, you got fruit roll ups
and fruit roll ups. Daisy, you want to come see our fruit roll up bar? Yeah, so maybe that's it. Yeah, I'm not conflicted. I think going post 9 is so intriguing. I don't know what to expect. A lot of what you're saying, Joseph, yeah, absolutely. Love it. And it's like, could people accuse some of, hey, you know, we got First Order remnants being similar to the Imperial remnants? Sure, but that's also the natural way of things. So I'm intrigued by that. I'm intrigued by that storyline. But who you pull in is an interesting thing. I'm with you too, Jen. I heard some hesitation on not Finn the character, but maybe John Boyega the performer.
Yes.
About coming back. He's been relatively positive outside of saying some of the things that I think he needed and should have said about his experience. Mm-hmm. Oscar Isaac, there's been times where I'm like, he'll never return to anything. But then he comes back from Moon Knight, just coming back into the fold and the family, to that bigger Disney family. So I think there's some ways forward. But it's almost like one of those sitcom spinoffs when it's like, what characters will show up? You know, who's going to actually show up on Frasier? In what year? And how much do you want it to be related to Cheers? And will that, this is more for me, like if it's Daisy Ridley is right, that's wonderful. That's a lot of storytelling. But if it's, just Babu Frick, will I miss the rest of the team? Will I wonder why no one else is there? And so I'm curious to finally maybe get some answers, because eventually they will go forward. It's just kind of, I find myself in a confusing head spin of a space over it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Sorry. I'm catching my breath here. I'm not back in game shape, by the way, everyone. I don't know. We didn't even miss an episode during the holidays, but I've mentally taken off another 5 days. And I forget what I'm doing. I don't know how to do this.
Understandable.
I'll say, Joseph, Jennifer, eventually we are going to get a film in production. And I think there's a little bit, when I saw this story pop up, again, we want to look into how it's presented, who's behind it, that kind of stuff. But I got excited because it is possible. It would be a little bit of a secret pre-production process or casting. And I don't know, that seems, in this day and age, seems almost impossible to pull off. Yeah. But hey, maybe they could. But I just got excited that, yeah, hey, eventually this will happen. A new film will go into production. And I think we're closer than we are, closer than maybe we think. So that's where some of my excitement is. I don't know if you guys have any excitement as well. Joseph?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's a part of this. The story and the way it's presented is like, I would believe that it is going into pre-production, that they, you know, have a script and they decided, green light, this is the next one we're doing for sure. And let's, hey, we got drawings going, we got casting meetings starting to happen, but I don't think that, you know, film is rolling or digital buttons are being hit in April. So I think it's much more of a pre-production thing than a production thing, but any for sure forward movement is exciting because yes, the movies will come. I'm very curious to talk about the actual dates in the slate and all that. But yeah.
Yeah. Jen, you get any level of excitement when some of these stories pop up?
Yes, I do. But I also try and be cautiously optimistic. Like you said, I know a Star Wars movie is going to come eventually. Mm-hmm. I don't know when that will be. But yeah, timeline wise, this would seem really fast because weren't we just talking about like the writing process in like November, December?
Yeah, well, and that it may have emerged after Star Wars Celebration with that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Conclave of writers.
Right. You know, the thing that gets me excited is thinking about the scale of this movie. We saw the scale of Andor. I just think of that behind the scenes featurette that they showed with these massive sets and the creatures and the aliens and the costumes. And it just was so grand. And I know that they're going to bring that again, probably even more for a Star Wars movie. And so that's what gets me excited. But when I think of that, I'm like, oh, that takes a lot of time. That takes a lot of preparation. So like you said, Joseph, pre-production, I could see them going into that in April, but you know, other than that, it would be really fast.
Yeah. Yeah. Bonkers fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Slate in front of the camera, probably not going to happen, but eventually it will, which we're going to round out this discussion with a fun little tag here. We're calling this kind of fun Vegas odds. That's right. We're going to go do some Star Wars betting. Do we think a new movie will be made official, whether announcement, title card, whatever, a leaked report, but no, I'm talking about official StarWars.com news. Do you think we'll be made official at, by, or after Star Wars Celebration London, which is only a few months away in April? Jennifer, where are you putting your chips down?
Oh my gosh. One time I went to Vegas and I was playing blackjack and I was not good. And there was a man at the table who looked so annoyed and it was my turn. And he was like, ugh. So I'm not a good guesser at odds here, not good at gambling. But if I were to gamble, I would say a title could be announced at Celebration. Okay. Nothing else, just the title and the look at that font and the color of the title. You know how they do that? Where it's, that's what we're probably going to get. And maybe we'll get like an appearance from the director and the writers. They'll come on stage, wave hello. We have an exciting movie that's going to be coming out, blah, 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 right? And that's about it.
Okay, so we learned a lot. Jennifer thinks there's going to be a title reveal, Star Celebration, and she hits on 19 while at the blackjack table. That's what we learned here today there. I love this. And just if I hit stay or, you know, fold, what are you doing?
Oh, in Vegas, fold before I even start for my own safety. I had one crash course in gambling when I did a show in a small town, and then we stayed at a casino, and I was given a per diem, and I had that classic like, "Hey, I just made $10. If I keep playing, I could." Oh, I lost everything. Oh, this is what gambling is. I get it. But in our fun what if I was going to put money on this, I think a film will be announced around the time of Celebration. One way that I could see it happening is I think that there is sort of in acceptance that the trades are really on top of things like as big as a new Star Wars movie. So I think that there is a possibility that this is just suddenly a we wake up on a Tuesday morning, or more likely a Monday afternoon, right after we finish recording our news show, and a tweet will go out. This movie called this, directed by this person, written by this person, no other details, is coming this date. That's it, you know? And that just lives in the imagination on social media, maybe some trades hinting at some other things. And then at Celebration, you know, as part of like a Lucasfilm panel, maybe the big button at the end is a director or a star comes out and announces, you know, another detail. Maybe the date doesn't get announced. You know, I thought that was, they've gotten so much better at sort of milking the announcements, right? Like Harrison Ford just coming out and announcing the date of the Indiana Jones movie, right?
Yeah. Right.
So I think they're getting better. I think it's too early for a trailer, maybe some weird tease, but I think they're getting much better at, maybe it's the director comes out and reveals a star. I don't know. Those are great betting odds in Vegas. I don't know. What do you guys think? but just to review very quickly, the current date I looked up on Disney's slate, and we know that movie dates change all the time now, but the current untitled Star Wars film is slated for November 19th, 2025. And I think that is what this movie is shooting for. Because we have this other big piece of information that we didn't know is how is Avatar going to do? Avatar: The Way of Water. Because Avatar: The Way of Water is the next Avatar film is dated for December 2024. So, they could probably get a Star Wars film done by 2024. But since Avatar did hit and make a lot of money in December, are they going to want to mess with that? How many rough interviews will grumpy old James Cameron give if they try to bump him from December for a Star Wars film? So I think that if it gets done earlier, if the film's on track and moving fast, maybe not a December release. Otherwise, I think it is going to be in 2025.
Yeah, because the window was, I think, missed. I'll say that's a strong term. Missed. The window was missed. 2023 was the window, right? Which was the plan, and it didn't happen. It didn't happen because you got Avatar, and clearly, despite any internet chatter, it's doing well, and it's getting people's attention. I wouldn't want Star Wars to compete with that. You couldn't. I don't think they'd be smart. No. Which is weird because I'm so now used to Star Wars in December. Now, yeah, you're right. You're reminding me it's November. Now we got to go to a new month, but then does any of that mean anything, you know?
Yeah. And I'm looking that up to make sure I didn't just write that down wrong. Cause then when I said it, I was like, hey, wait. I don't want to be the one given bad news, incorrect news.
I just took it as fact.
You just took it as fact. You already tweeted it, didn't you, Ken?
Who is this Joseph Scribshaw?
What are his biases? Yeah. No, he claims every movie is going to be about Obi-Wan Kenobi for the rest of time. Sure. Right. It's a bias here. Yeah. I am pulling it up. I misspoke. December 19th, 2025. I think because I think that is really central. Thank you for catching my error. I'm going to claim I did all of that on purpose to teach a lesson about facts.
There you go.
It's a lie. It's a lie. I made a mistake, everybody. I apologize. But I think it is vital to the conversation because it is December has become a blockbuster window, partially because of The Force Awakens. And there's that question of should Star Wars be anywhere else but that, particularly when it's coming back, which means if it's going to come back in 2024, it would have to fight with Avatar. Otherwise, December 19th, 2025.
Well, yeah. It just makes sense. It's so weird. Here we are 7 years, 8 years past, where it's like the debate of will a movie even survive in December is long gone, in large part because of Force Awakens. Do either of you have like the idea of, all right, we have so many, got Avatars, we got so many big movies, screw it. Star Wars goes back to May and it's the beginning of the summer season blockbuster. Do you think that could even work? Or are we so far past that? I'm not even worried about the Solo conversation. I'm talking about a big event movie going forward. There's something about it I like about it, but it oddly enough feels weird to me. I don't know. Jen?
Yeah. I don't think it will work. I mean, I don't know, but I feel in my gut. And the reason why is because during the holidays, families are coming together And the one thing that unites families is going to see a movie, whether it's in their home or out at the theaters, hopefully, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's something where it's like, oh, that's easy. We can all get together. We can go, you know, grab dinner together and go see a movie. And Star Wars could unite generations, right? Mm-hmm. And you get the whole family, literally the whole family, you know, grandparents, grandchildren, whatever, all go into the movies to go see a Star Wars film. That mm-hmm. is a no-brainer. In May, you know, you have the hardcores, the Star Wars diehards, as that guy said, but it just doesn't have that same, I don't know, it's like, it's almost like an advantage that December has, right? And there's just like, there's only so much competition in December because everyone knows, like, you don't want to go up against an Avatar or a Star Wars, right? So it's just kind of like money maker. December is a money maker month, I think.
Yeah. I feel like the history of the blockbuster is obviously lots of people seeing it, but the ability for people to see it multiple times, right? And that was sort of the revolution of releasing Star Wars and other films in May. So the intense people, the adults, mm-hmm. could see it right before school goes out, but then they could see it again and again and in the summer, and kids could see it when they didn't have anything else going on in the summer school-wise. But that's just changed, right? It's blockbuster after blockbuster in the summer. And that was part of what Ding Solo is. People just can't afford it. It's mm-hmm. not. And I think in a way, the December blockbuster, exactly because of what Jennifer is saying, and Ken, you were talking about it on some episode recently about having some happy memories of seeing like The Last Jedi with family, right?
Yeah.
All of us diehards and lots of just movie aficionados see it once in late December and then see it again with families. I think Jennifer's spot on about it kind of needing that slot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. Again, it's amusing to me to here we are in 2023 now going, oh, Star Wars is a December film. I think I was part of the discussion in 2014 or whenever it was announced of what, December? Even the Hunger Games didn't crack 100 million. You're putting Star Wars there? It's just, I love that it's changed. I love that Star Wars was part of that change. That's part of what we love.
I was a big advocate of Solo coming out in May because I wanted that feeling of a summer blockbuster. I wanted that feeling mm-hmm. of, you know, you see Han Solo whip around in the Millennium Falcon, then you get on your bike and you play because it's summertime and that. But I have to admit that emotionally it felt great for me, but it mm-hmm. didn't work financially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we'll see. Our chips are down on the table for me. Oh, I don't think I put my bet down. I might slide into the same square as Joseph on the table and be one of those bettors. I was thinking, you know, at Celebration, just dump it all out there. But you're so right, particularly with the Indiana Jones thing, a piece here, a little candy on the trail leading you forward. Just makes sense that, on a random Monday afternoon at about 2 p.m. when we're all wrapped up, they put some StarWars.com announcement out there. And then, they don't need the ticket sales are going pretty good for Celebration, but they need the buzz around it. I can see that working, a combination of before and at Star Wars Celebration. So we'll see. All right. There we go. We took a deep dive into that rumor, talked about it. What's your thoughts on it? Let us know. Are you excited? Do you want Larma Daisy to show up? Of course you do. she'd be a great addition. And after Ackbar. I want after Ackbar and Larma Daisy to be our sequel trilogy characters in the new film. Before we take a break and get into some Star Wars history, we're going to do our Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph, we are into the second phase of the High Republic.
That's right. We are looking forward to reading the first book in the second phase, Star Wars The High Republic, Path of Deceit by Justina Ireland and Tessa Grattan. It's on our bookshelf staring at us, so we'll be diving in soon. And if you want to dive in with us, you can, of course, listen to an audiobook.
Listen to that audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter and downloading your free audiobook. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter and get that free audiobook. All right, quick break. On the other side, we got two This Week in Star Wars History entrances. I'm going to take a break. We're going to be right back here on ForceCenter.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome back to Force Center. I struggle to speak normally and properly anyways, but take a few days off mentally and I'm struggling here, but I'm Ken Napsack here on Force Center, Joseph Scrimshaw and Jennifer Landa. And because the news was a little slower this week, we like to sometimes change things up. We've already kind of looked ahead to Bad Batch, which drops this week. We've looked at our holiday wishes and our wants, maybe going forward in 2023. So I thought, hey, let's look a little deeper into Star Wars history. And we had some wonderful choices this week. We had some weeks this week in history. It's a little empty. It's a little of Star Wars was released in Bulgaria for the first time in 1981, which is great, but it's a little bit different history. But we got two wonderful things as we look ahead to Star Wars past. And on January 5th, 1975, Ralph McQuarrie handed in his first concept painting for George Lucas's space opera. The painting, Droids in the Desert, will become one of the most celebrated pieces of concept art in Star Wars lore and factor into every story Anthony Daniels tells about his time as C-3PO. So this is the painting of R2 looking, you know, as we could say now, Chopper-like, or Chopper looks R2-like. C-3PO looking a little bit more classic late 60s sci-fi, but the designs are there, including even the color from for the most part there. So what do we think of that painting growing up? I want to start there, Jen. At some point, we saw this painting as a Star Wars youngster. And what did it do to your Star Wars loving soul?
You know, when I was younger, I didn't know who Ralph McQuarrie was or mm-hmm. that this painting was the inspiration for Star Wars. It just is one of those things. It just is always a part of my life, right? I knew the artwork, but I didn't know its history. And then as I was a teenager, I wanted to learn more about the production and the making of Star Wars. And that's when I learned about the great Ralph McQuarrie, how influential his art is. But I love this painting. I always have, because even then it just seems so futuristic. And now it seems futuristic and modern. Like, that's what's so incredible to me. It doesn't look dated in any way, shape, or form. Such a testament to his art and the impact that Ralph McQuarrie's art has had.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. Yeah. And yeah, at some point, the name Ralph McQuarrie didn't even emerge. It was just these paintings were here. And then you kind of discover who was behind him. I love that part of my Star Wars fandom as well. Joseph, this picture, this painting growing up, what did you think?
I was aware who Ralph McQuarrie was because of the Topps Empire Strikes Back cards that they had the character cards at the beginning of the sequence, then they went through the whole narrative of the film, and then at the back they would have these concept art, and I didn't really understand what it was, but I think, you know, like, my brother was using these to try to teach me to read, so I think he was probably like, Ralph McQuarrie, learn it, memorize it, learn to read it. So I don't remember even like a time I didn't know Ralph McQuarrie, but I didn't understand what concept art was. And it was, we've talked a lot about, you know, when we were younger, particularly with the genre things, with comic book characters being translated, like, or images of Star Wars, sometimes they're just wrong, right? Just like, hey, that's a picture of Darth Vader, but his lightsaber's the wrong color. Ben Kenobi, you know?
Yeah.
And the concept art that was like that to me, I was kind of confused by why some of it looked really like the stuff on screen. And then some of it looked not quite like it was on screen, and I didn't understand why. And I was like, well, maybe this Ralph McQuarrie guy saw that part of the film, but maybe he doesn't know what 3PO looks like. So I remember being, when I was younger, loving some of his art and then being weirded out by some of it. And in particular, this one, that it kind of fell into the uncanny valley of like, I know that's 3PO and R2, but it also isn't. And I think looking back now, what is absolutely powerful about it, what helped sell Star Wars, would help me love it, and what Anthony Daniels constantly talks about, is there is haunting emotion in 3PO's face. So I think as a kid, I was a little bit of like, that is 3PO, that isn't, I don't know what to make of it. But I think he was also probably didn't have the words for it or the emotional capacity to express it. But I was affected by that face that looked so frozen and so full of emotion for a robot.
Yeah, I love you being honest and sharing that part of your journey, because I think that was where I was, particularly with the New Hope concept art, right? Like, now we celebrate it. Now it's like, oh, this could have been Darth Maul, or Rey could have been Kira designed as it. Like, and we love that, and it's part of the lore, but it's because of McQuarrie's art, and it's because of his first big swings at Star Wars that I think that we love celebrating the journey. But yeah, I'm with you. As a youngster, 83, really falling in love with Star Wars. That was my year, and getting some of these paintings or seeing them or that magazine about the making of Return of the Jedi. And you just see some of the stuff, particularly some of the Jabba stuff. I was like, well, that's not right. That's not Jabba. you don't understand the process. But yeah, this one, and like I said, the New Hope stuff. And I still, now obviously we get it, but I still sometimes see it in that light where I'm just like, how did they get Vader from this? That's amazing to me, which is just a naive look at it, I suppose. But I'm right there with you on that journey. I was slightly confused because I couldn't, it's like, you're telling me this is Star Wars? This isn't Star Wars. Do you need to see them? I have the VHS taped off TV. You want to see it? Because that's what an X-Wing looks like. Yeah. I love that. That's a fun part of exploring and discovering Star Wars as you grow up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But we mentioned Anthony Daniels. We love Anthony. We love Anthony Daniels. I love that Anthony Daniels has such ownership over the 3PO character, a tight grip on the 3PO character. So I love hearing his story. Look, I'm the uncle at the party who tells the same story 15 times. I get it. I love hearing his story of looking at the painting and just kind of connecting with that face. You're right, Joseph. There's so much emotion there. So what are we thankful for regarding the inspiration Daniels took from this piece? Jennifer, would we have wanted a different kind of 3PO? Or are we very happy where Daniels sat in the lobby and saw this photo and said, this is where I'm taking the character?
I mean, what an incredible actor to be able to see this concept art and really kind of take that and run with it and create this character that, if you kind of walk a certain way and talk just with a little bit of an accent, immediately most people will figure out who you are, right? Yeah. That's so incredible that he created such an iconic performance from this, which is funny because George Lucas has said that he showed Ralph McQuarrie the Metropolis robot, right? The 1972 movie Metropolis. He showed that robot to Ralph McQuarrie and said, hey, I want something like this. So just all the inspirations that came together to create C-3PO. It's why I love art. It's why I love acting. And oh my gosh, what a treasure Anthony Daniels is. I'm so happy. And I'm so happy that he tells that story because I'd forgotten it. So I need to hear things a few times to be able to remember them. I appreciate it.
I love his stories. I'm still upset that we haven't got the, or at least I don't know, unless Rian Johnson has answered somewhere. There's a great moment in The Director and the Jedi where Anthony Daniels is on set just doing some lines as 3PO, they're recording, right? And he's doing the, let me do it again. Then he comes up and he goes to Rian Johnson and is like, starting to tell him something. And he looks over the documentary camera and is like, wait, are you mic'd up? Are you mic'd up? Yeah, I'm mic'd up. Oh, okay. Because I was going to tell you something. And then they walk off. Because it seemed really gossipy. It seemed really gossipy. So love it. Anyways, yeah, Joseph, your thoughts on Daniel looking at this photo and starting to build the character.
I think it was total gossip. I think he was going to say like Daisy Ridley took the last, you know, canapé or whatever, like, you know, something totally gossipy and unimportant.
Yeah.
That's my headcanon for that. I love that moment. I think, you know, as an adult growing up, I talked about, you know, how I reacted as a kid. And then I think I was, you know, late teens, early 20s when I saw Metropolis. And that was one of my first like, oh, holy crap, this sort of we can't control when we're born and get to figure out where we are on the timeline. Right. And realize that this thing I've known since I was a kid, and I encountered this image first here, but this image has its birth way back in Metropolis. That was kind of one of my first moments where the sort of the dime drop that I have my narrative of existence, but then there's a narrative of existence for these things that I have to reorder in my mind because this is where I first encountered it, but it's not where it began. So I think I really associate powerfully this image with that revelation, and that's so important with Star Wars, with so many of the things being connected to the past that many of us were not alive for. But then I think I also didn't know for a long time that this was the image that Lucas was like, I'm not going to be able to communicate this to executives. They are not going to understand. And Ralph McQuarrie saves Star Wars by crafting this. And that this single image, which is so rooted in Flash Gordon and pulp, it's an image about the fantastic, about seeing things on screen that you can't see in real life, with those, you know, double celestial bodies, looks like moons in this painting, in this weird desert, and then these weird, unknowable robots. They look so fantastic, so different from what our life is. But then the emotion on that robot face is all about who we really are as humans. This image is the intersection. To me, it is why I love genre. It's why I love pulp, is because on one hand, it's presenting the absolute fantastic that we cannot see in real life, but then we find ourselves in it somehow. And I think that's the power of this piece and why I love it as an adult.
Yeah, and I think it does speak to the absolute genius of Anthony Daniels as a performer. And it's such a wonderful journey to what we know now of all right, this Tony Daniels guy is going to get in this costume. He connects with it, starts building it based off a lot of what you both are discussing here. But also, but don't worry, we'll get someone else to voice it. We'll audition a bunch of people to figure out, hey, we'll put someone in there. And then they end up with Anthony Daniels because the answer was right in front of you. Right in front of you, just because of what he brought to it, and how, you know, there was that thought of 3PO was going to be kind of a, I don't know, used car salesman type of energy, and to me, you know, it's impossible to go back and choose a different path here, you know, then we would have been celebrating 3PO as a used car salesman, I suppose, but I just think it's part of the Star Wars magic that everything falls into place, man, whether you want to say it's the Force or not. Of I think the dynamic between R2 and 3PO works as is, and works based a lot on what Anthony Daniels took from that photo, took out of the connection, took out of those eyes staring back at him. And it wasn't some schlocky, hacky used car salesman robot. It was someone, a robot with a lot of anxieties, a lot of adherence to rules, a lot of conflict, especially to the little, you know, a-hole next to him who's swearing at him and calling him names, but they love each other. These robots love each other. So I love it. I love it. And it's all part of this magical history. You know, not to get too deep, but yeah, it's like things happen and things happen for a reason. You look back and it all makes some sort of sense. And Star Wars very much has that in it. And it all begins with the Ralph McQuarrie paintings. It's an amazing part of Star Wars and love looking back. So it's an important day in Star Wars history. Indeed.
Absolutely.
But it's not the only day we're going to celebrate. Yeah, no. On January 7th, 2011. Oh man, we are just under 2 years away from the sale to Disney. Remember those days? On January 7th, 2011, the Knight Sisters airs for the first time in the U.S., treating the viewers of Star Wars, The Clone Wars, to the captivating dark magic of the Knight Sisters and Mother Talzin, while expanding the tragic tale of Asajj Ventress. Written by Katie Lucas, the episode was the first in a powerful arc about Palpatine forcing Dooku to get rid of his deadly apprentice. Though, be careful with that word. Don't use that word around Palpatine. What are our memories of the episodes then in 2011? Jen, you did a wonderful Happy Beeps, no, Jedi Beat version, I think, of Katie Lucas and what she brought to the Tales of Ventress and how much of it was from her heart and soul. So we'll start with you. Going back to 2011, what were your memories of the episodes?
Yeah, I've talked about it before. I went to a special screening at the Egyptian Theater, I think it was, where they were showing the arc, the Knight Sisters arc. And, you know, I hadn't really been keeping up with the Clone Wars at that time too much. I think I had seen like a few episodes. And I was like, oh, I don't know. Like, it seems maybe like it might be a kid's show. Ha, ha, ha. There were kids in that screening. Let me tell you, those kids, they did a trivia contest with those kids. And those kids would put all of us to shame. They knew so much Star Wars knowledge and lore. Anyways, the Knight Sisters arc. I was in that theater and I was floored. It was fantastic Star Wars storytelling that I love. Fresh new characters. It was scary. It was dark. It was female characters that I had never seen in Star Wars before. And then to know it was written by Katie Lucas, it just was really, it was an imaginal experience. And even now it still holds up. It's my favorite arc of the Clone Wars to this day. I just love it.
Well said. And I'm going to again plug that episode. We might just have to I'll pull out a link here and maybe we'll tweet it out this week as well. Jen, you just such a great Jedi Beat episode going into Katie Lucas of it all, just her as a creator and what she brought to Clone Wars, but particularly these episodes. It's really powerful stuff. I'm curious, Joseph, your take on it, because I know your journey with Clone Wars is comes a little bit later, but Had you heard whispers? Had you seen clips of these witches in Star Wars? Were you aware of it at all in 2011?
No, not at all. I remember vividly walking into this store called Shinders in whatever year Courtship of Princess Leia came out.
Yeah,
seeing that book and going, not sure about this one. Don't know if I'll pick it up. And now how I wish that somebody had yelled, hey, there are space witches in that. Then I would have picked it up in a second and I would have been on board the Witches of Dathomir Night Sisters train from their beginning in the EU. Obviously, I know they get reworked into the Night Sisters we know in the canon of Clone Wars. But no, in 2011, I was keeping up with Star Wars mostly by checking the toy aisle at Target. I've said a bunch of times that's how I found out that Maul was back. I was like, wait, what? What's up with these legs? Why is he in a two-pack with Kenobi? I didn't see Knight Sister or Mother Talzin action figures because there weren't enough of them. So I guess I knew Asajj Ventress from the 2D Clone Wars back in 2005. So I knew she was in the show, but I didn't understand the whole history of who the Knight Sisters were. So I did that watch of the Clone Wars, watching it all together in about 2014 when I first moved to Los Angeles. And this is one of the arcs that blew me away. The first couple seasons of Clone Wars are kept being, things that are like, oh, actually, that's pretty great. Oh, actually, that's pretty great. And then by season three, it was like, what? I've been missing out. And this is one of the arcs that blew me away, I think. Asajj Ventress suddenly moving from really fun, charismatic femme fatale tropes to this tragic, grounded, used and abused figure. but has this proud history and has this strength to try to redefine herself. It was just amazing. And then on top of it, all of the Star Wars pulling so directly from these various horror ideas, both the fun, pulpy surface of horror, and honestly, with witches, the depth of this is one perspective to talk about the experience of women, you know?
Yeah, a lot of great stuff there. Yeah, not a bad answer for someone who didn't see it in 2011. And I, too, was watching the Clone Wars, but I looking back, I think I had one eye on the series, right? And I've talked about, you know, post Revenge of the Sith. I just kind of felt it was all done anyways. Suddenly there was a cartoon is out. I don't know what's going on, but I loved it, right? And I remember being told, hey, check it out. And I think I definitely was there for more of the pew side of it and the clones fighting. I like that fighting in the Star Wars. And so with this episode, along with a lot of things around this time, I had one eye on it. So it wasn't like I didn't fully understand it, didn't engage with it, and had a little bit of what, now you're telling me there's witches in Star Wars? I don't know about that. Had a little bit of that vibe. And obviously now getting a chance to revisit it, not even just on the Clone Wars report, but even 2016, 17, 18 range when I was watching a lot of the episodes again. Yeah, you just see a lot of what's there. You pick up what Katie Lucas and everyone is putting into this character. You're so right, Joseph. She's a great character in the 2D stuff. She's a cool Star Wars villain, right? We like our cool red saber growling fighting villains. And now she just becomes an actual character by this point. And there's so much into it. And that hug that embraced by Mother Talzin, Ventress returning to some sort of version of home, some sort of version of comfort, which also is not necessarily the final stop on her journey and where she goes. I love all that stuff. And then those witches are so much more than some kind of, you know, just a trope. And you're right, Joseph, there's a lot to the tale of witches and who's considered witches and the Salem witch, all those things we grew up with, all the boring history that maybe you overlooked as a kid. There's so much more meaning to it. And I can tell you, some is sharing a house with a known witch. It's changed my view on it here. So I think that's part of what I love about these episodes. And it's a lesson of letting not just Star Wars grow with you, but you growing at catching up to Star Wars is a lot of what I think of when I think of these episodes here. And you mentioned it too, Joseph. I was going to ask how we felt about the Night Sisters being pulled into canon. And I too, I own somewhere in my storage shed is a copy of The Courtship of Princess Leia that I think has a bookmark about 6 pages into it, because that's when I stopped reading. No disrespect to anyone who loves those books. That's about the time I started pulling out of the EU stuff. Truce of Bakura, Courtship of Princess Leia. They just didn't work for me. But I, too, am ashamed that I did not understand. And it wasn't until years later that I learned that the Night Sisters essentially emerged from that. Jen, that's kind of that kind of good reminder that I shouldn't be tossing out the EU as easily as I may have in the past. Yeah.
Oh, you got further than me. I think I was on page 3. And after years of lugging that book around, one day I was like, I'm going to donate it to Goodwill. And oh, no. Oh, man, I wish I had it back. Because I didn't know at the time that that was the origin of the Night Sisters, the Witches of Dathomir. And had I known that, that would have sold me and I would have gotten further than page like 2 or 3.
That's crazy. Yeah. And Joseph, I know you didn't know then, how recent, cause I, it was relatively recent within the last couple of years that I connected those dots.
Yeah. I think, some probably Q&A or some news story or some deep dive of the Clone Wars caused me to really make sure that I understood a little bit more of the history, maybe a StarWars.com article. And yeah, somewhere in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, did I understand where they came from, that they didn't just spring fully formed from the 2D Clone Wars series or from the animated series, the you know, 3D animated Clone Wars. Yeah, it's only in the last couple of years that I learned a little bit more about their history, because they do feel just totally fully formed and new in the Clone Wars 3D animated series.
Yeah, Good stuff. There's a round of this discussion here, talking about the legacy of this arc. I think I've shared some of the personal legacy of look under the hood of the car and maybe take some time with these stories here. It's one of the reasons we always love to engage with what's presented to us and discover a little bit more of the meaning and the themes behind the art, because I overlooked this for so long of just being, I don't know, some witch story in Star Wars. But Jennifer, what's part of the legacy of this arc that you love and why you consider it your favorite arc in the Clone Wars?
Yeah, two things. And similar to what you're saying is that, you know, the reason why I catch myself between, you know, lambasting something or saying, oh, that's not for me, it's because for a long time I did that. Oh, the Star Wars Rebels, nah, you know. And what happens is that with time, things happen, my tastes change and I revisit it and I'm like, I love this. And that kind of happened with the Clone Wars, is at first I thought it was a kid's show. And then I saw this arc and went, it is not. This is for everyone. And this has some fantastic storylines. For me, the legacy, specifically with Mother Talzin, the reason why I love her so much is because she is a mother in every sense of the word. She is, you know, nurturing. She cares about Ventress. She gives her a place, right, to belong. She wants to protect her clan, but is to what extent? To the extreme of it. And it takes what it is to be a mother and just magnifies it and blows it out. And I love that she's ruthless and she uses dark side magic and witchiness to protect her clan. Oh, it's just, it's incredible. It's like cathartic to watch it. And I love the Night Sisters because they're like dark side ninjas and they're cool costumes and cool weapons. It's just like, you know, they're not in like some crazy armor or anything. They just have like this ability and their fierceness, and yet they still look really freaking cool. There's just so much I love about it. And the way that it's the visuals and the red colors of Dathomir, all of it, fantastic.
Love that. We started this episode talking about fourth grade and building missions out of sugar cubes. Fourth grade was also the year I wanted to be a ninja. It was all the craze. If you were there, you'd know. Weird time. But I love what you're saying, Jen. Yeah, especially the Mother Talzin of it all. Here's the challenge I would have. Tony Gilroy, you get to do more Star Wars. You want to do more Star Wars? Great, but it's got to be the Night Sisters. You have to do that. What are you going to do with that? Joseph, you've said some wonderful things already about the legacy of this arc, but some closing comments on the Night Sisters of Dathomir.
Yeah, I think Mother Talzin, just as a character, I so agree with Jennifer. I think there's the aesthetic. There's the weird double voice that goes on with her that's just so like classic, you know, horror. And I always love, like, how much magic is she giving to the tatters of her dress that float upward? Like, is that a fan or is she constantly using some dark side magic to make her outfit be a little creepy? There's just so much aesthetically about her that's so great. And then there's this depth of, it's fascinating what we know about the Night Sisters in Mother Talzin, and it's fascinating what we don't entirely know that that adds to the horror element if we don't entirely understand their history and their legacy. I love that we kind of find them in a place where they are living their life. And when Asajj comes back to Dathomir, Mother Talzin is really kind of saying, like, you're not a Sith. You're not going to be a Sith. They, of course, used you and then rejected you when they thought you were too powerful. Now come home. Now be this. And Asajj is still kind of wrestling with, can I do that? Can I just come home and be a Night Sister? Because they kind of stay here. And I've been used to being out in the world. And I think that's where a lot of the fascinating dynamics and a lot of the legacy comes in, is the Night Sisters, as we meet them, are mostly on Dathomir. Mother Talzin's maybe doing some spells every once in a while, and she's been crossed to try to get out. But it's really Palpatine who kicks off the whole thing of, like, I want to use these women for their power. I took Maul from them. Dooku took Asajj, you know, in a roundabout way from them. But now these women that I wanted to use have too much power. So I'm going to try to take that away from them, even when they're, for the most part, just leaving me alone, you know, and that's where I think it gets into really interesting dynamics about fear and the cycle of fear and, you know, everything goes on with the test of the Knight Brothers and it could go on and on. I think it's a really, really complicated and fascinating arc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So much there. I love what you're both saying there. And yeah, just the Palpatine of it all. And I love that Talzin's kind of, got a little bit of a running history of being a little bit of a problem for old Palpatine there. Yep. And it's just what it means for him, his ultimate evil in his thirst and quest for power. It's all powerful there. So if you're listening and you haven't taken a dive into the Night Sisters arc, go for it. Take a deep dive. Take a deep dive into Clone Wars. Take a deep dive into Rebels. Experience it all again for the first time if you need to. And as I said before, we'll throw out that Jedi Beat episode that Jen did. Man, Jen, I don't want to say how many years ago. Probably too long for us to want to hear how long you did it. Wow. But it is there, and it's some of my favorite Force Center content there. Jen's look at Katie Lucas and her contributions to Clone Wars and this arc in particular. So that is it for this week. Star Wars news, Star Wars history. We have got a full year in front of us. Movies, conventions, travel, new show. Oh, we are kicking off 2023 in a nice calm way for the fun that's going to come later here. All right, we're out of here on Twitter, Force Center Pods, where you can follow us. Hive Social, Force Center. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We are on Instagram and YouTube as well, as you mentioned up top. We'd love to have you subscribe over there. Figure Fights comes to you in February. Stay tuned for that. Podcast available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and more. Just search. You'll find us. Merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter and patreon.com/ForceCenter is where you can support us directly if you so choose. Follow me at Ken Knapsack. Go to my website, kennapsack.com, for more information on all the things I do, including my new show, The Blathering, dropping next week on my podcast feed, now called the Knapsack Network, because, you know, why not just put my name everywhere, I guess. I don't know. And more information on shows coming. Jen, where can they follow you?
That's important. Put your name everywhere. Get it out there, right? And I'm going to share my social media at Jennifer Landa, which is pretty much any social media site that's in existence right now. I think I'll get back on Be Real. I heard that's really popular with the youngsters. Be Real?
My first time hearing about it.
Really? Oh, it's pretty cool, but except it prompts you like throughout the day where you have to like take a picture of yourself, and then it takes a picture of whatever you're looking at or experiencing. So, if you have a really exciting life, it's really cool. For me, it'd be like me watching my kids all day. So, and TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138, and that's about it. And I'll be getting back to making video content soon.
Soon. All right. I've learned something that I'm not going to get involved with. All right. Good stuff. Joseph, where can I find you?
You can find me on all the social media except the ones I don't know about, like Be Real. I'm not on Post yet either. But besides that, find me on Instagram, TikTok, Tumblr, Twitter, still all those places. You can also check out my YouTube page. You can just search on YouTube for Joseph Scrimshaw. There's also a link to all of our YouTube pages at the bottom of that Force Center YouTube page. I got more stuff coming soon and more details on that coming soon. So thanks to everyone who's joined me over there.
Thank you all. Thank you all. New year, same us, but new fun toys on the way here, quite literally. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time here on Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us.
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.